Well, good morning again. When I reviewed the lectionary readings for today, this last scripture from 2 Timothy that Kimberly just read for us really jumped out to me for two reasons. First, the challenge that Paul presents us when he writes these words, "Preach the word, be prepared in and out of season, correct, rebuke, and encourage with great patience and instruction." And then the last verse, which reads, "But you, keep your head in all situations, endure hardship, do the work of an evangelist, discharge all the duties of your ministry." You see, Paul is directly commanding us to preach, to evangelize. The second reason I focused on this comes from the prescience that's exhibited in the verses between those two excerpts. It seems like Paul is writing about today and what many seem to think Christian means. Those two verses are these: "For the time will come when people will not put up with sound doctrine. Instead, to suit their own desires, they will gather around them a great number of teachers to say what their itching ears want to hear. They will turn their ears away from the truth and turn aside to myths." See, we only need to look at the current news to see lots and lots of people calling themselves Christians, but who in fact have turned away from the actual teachings of Jesus and unfortunately treat them as nothing more than in their words, woke nonsense. Let's dig into the first point first, where we're actually called to preach, to evangelize. How does that make you feel? I know for some people, like my wife, Jackie, being called to preach, let alone stand in front of any crowd to talk, is totally out of the question. That might be the same for some of you. For others, though, and a few of you talked to me before worship this morning, you've sat in front of preachers for decades and decades and decades, and I'm sure more than once thought, I could do better than that. Hopefully today's not one of those mornings. I want to make crystal clear that this call to preach, to share the gospel, is not a suggestion. While most Christians know of Jesus' great commandment in the Gospel of Matthew, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and all your strength, what some people don't know is that six chapters later comes Jesus' great commission to, quote, "go forth and make disciples of all nations." And this great commission is one of only a few handful of things that is present in all four Gospels. Honestly, the Great Commission sounds really scary. How can I, or you, make disciples of all the nations? It's just too big. So we need to think about it differently. You see, those first 12 disciples, they were just regular guys. They had no special skills. What they did have was excitement. When a disciple learned about Jesus, they'd get excited and tell their buddies, "Hey, check Jesus out. There's nothing special. There's no hard sell, no condemnation. Just one friend telling another, hey, come check it out." Now think about that. How many of you had the exact same conversation, maybe about something else? Maybe a movie you want someone to check out, or a book, or a restaurant? We all have those same conversations. Why does it get so much more difficult when we're asked to share about our love for Jesus? How many of you, I kind of like this, I can lean them here. How many of you get uneasy when I use the word evangelism? Or if I say you should be an evangelist? I thought you needed something, sorry. Back to the sermon. What if I use the adjective evangelical? Seriously, I want you to take a second to think about those words. Evangelism, evangelical. How do those words make you feel? Can I say that Whitney United Methodist Church believes in evangelism? Can I call this an evangelical church? Well, your reactions are actually helping the sermon, so thank you. See, it's getting a little awkward, right? Why is that? How did the original disciples' model of reaching out to their buddies to share their love of Jesus morph into this thing that's getting congregants yelling out from the back row? Why does it make so many people uncomfortable now? I think there's a couple of reasons this may be so. The first is the nature of people. We all have multiple and often competing priorities. Among that jumble of priorities, sadly, sharing the importance of Jesus or simply even talking about church is not top for most people. Thus, his message isn't shared at all by many churchgoers. It's also the nature of all people to interpret things in their lives through their own biases, their own prejudices, and their own lived experiences. And I do mean all people. Every single one of us does this. I know I do. I have some very strong biases, some serious, others less so. I believe pineapple never belongs on pizza. In baseball, I believe the designated hitter should be outlawed. I believe kindness is always the right answer, even when I don't live up to that standard myself. Politically, I will tell you, I am an avowed never-Trumper. I think the president has deeply harmed and weakened our country. I bring these prejudices and a whole bunch more with me when I try to interpret the Bible. Everybody brings theirs with them. This becomes a problem when, instead of using the Bible as a challenge to our prejudices, to try to better align ourselves with the teachings of Jesus, people do the opposite and scan the Bible for verses that can be used in isolation to support and reinforce their biases and their particular views on how life should be. As a result, they interpret their prejudices as biblical, that their beliefs are righteous. Therefore, anyone who disagrees with them is an enemy of the Bible, Jesus, and God, and thus evil, and must be rejected and defeated. This is where Paul's second point comes in. The one about the time, and I'll read it again here. The time will come when people will not put up with sound doctrine. Instead, to suit their own desires, they will gather around them a great number of teachers who say what their itching ears want to hear. They will turn their ears away from the truth. See, another reason for the tainting of the word evangelism comes from our institutions of power, both within religious denominations as well as in secular society. For our purposes this morning, I'd like to focus on one group of Christian churches who have adopted a title perfectly aligned with the sermon, the larger evangelical church. and its transformation over the last 50 years into a major institution of power within the lives of millions of Americans, as well as in the political arena. You see, half a century ago, what we may know as the right-wing evangelical church didn't even exist. For the first half of the 20th century, the network of churches that fall under the large tent of evangelical actually avoided partisan politics, other than advocating that all leaders should be faithful Christians and whose lives should adhere to Christian ideals. Did you know that in 1971, the largest evangelical group, the Southern Baptist Convention, have you heard of that one? They passed a resolution. The Southern Baptist Convention passed a resolution affirming abortion under a wide range of circumstances. In the year that Roe v. Wade passed, the Baptist press proclaimed it as a decision that, quote, advanced the cause of religious liberty, human equality, and justice. And that's just one example of how they've changed. Now, this is a far cry from the current evangelical church, which is deeply embedded in partisan politics and vociferously anti-abortion and quick to condemn anyone with whom they disagree and with anyone who criticizes their preferred political candidates. How'd that happen? How did that change occur? How did a number of churches, and thereby Christians, shift from focusing on spreading the love of God through evangelism to focusing on politics and culture war? I could go into a long, multifaceted analysis of this evolution, but I want to boil it down to just three things. Misplaced patriotism, the use of fear, and a lust for power. First, in the fervor of patriotism back in 1976, I know some of you remember 1976, several organizations keyed in on the old-time teaching of God's special blessing on the United States, hearkening back to the 19th century manifest destiny concept that God gave us this continent, it's ours to conquer. This belief morphed among some to equate God with country. Unfortunately, a large proportion of those evangelical churches, interpreted that to criticize the country was to attack God, thereby perverting the original priority of God over country. And you don't have to look too far to see signs and flags attesting to that nowadays. The second contributor to this metamorphosis is the use of fear as an evangelical tool. Groups such as the Moral Majority under Jerry Falwell and the Christian Coalition under Ralph Reed made perceived victimization and attacks from outside central to their recruiting message. In other words, they would preach that Christians were under attack from their godless enemies. To protect and promote Christianity, good people needed to support them and their organizations and donate, and it worked. For example, do you remember the so-called war on Christmas? Yeah. Well, because their methods worked, leading ministers and churches adopted the same strategy, putting evangelism through fear and false victimization at the forefront of their churches, instead of evangelism through the love and grace of Christ. Now, unfortunately, their misguided patriotism and their vilification of enemies perfectly aligned with the political battle of the 80s. Many leaders through that time, being human, sought power and prestige, as well as the growing congregations with their growing donations. and they ended up closely aligning themselves with political candidates and politicians, primarily from the Republican Party. Because of their perception that politics is a zero-sum game, the opposition had to be cast as anti-Christian and un-American. While their vitriol is reserved mostly for Democrats, such people are also quick to castigate any member of the in-group who speaks against their dogmatic positions. Think Liz Cheney or Adam Kinzinger. Now, because of all of this, many people today, when they hear the word evangelical, think of the anger and hatred that we see in the evening news. But come on, evangelical is just a word. Its dictionary definition is to spread the gospel. A synonym is teaching. That's what the disciples were doing. Unfortunately, by 2017, the Christian Science Monitor identified evangelical as a political identifier, not a doctrinal one. You, all of us, we need to get beyond this. We need to not be afraid of evangelism. It's common knowledge that increasingly young people are rejecting formal religion. I mean, honestly, I don't want to be offensive here, but look around. This church looks just like my church up at Hillview. This is because the young people are rejecting this because Christians are often being painted as hypocritical. Their actions of attacking and denigrating others are antithetical to the model set by Jesus. Think of Westboro Baptist Church. They're the church that's, well, I'll just say crazy. The ones that are usually loud and obnoxious, protesting funerals and other events like that. It's gotten to the point that teaching Jesus' words on the Sermon on the Mount, Beatitudes, have been labeled as too liberal and woke by evangelical leaders. So what do we do? Here comes the meat. First, churches need to abstain from partisan politics. Whether left or right-leaning, churches that elevate political engagement above spiritual humility and service are not serving the Lord. Thank you. Second, evangelism needs to be simplified. It shouldn't be thought of as something that Pastor Hannah does or some outreach committee does. It's kind of like the hymn earlier, "Here I Am." You know, is it I, Lord? Yeah, it's you. Real evangelism is personal. Real evangelism is one-on-one. It's based on relationships. It's as simple as someone saying, "Hey, you got to check out this Jesus guy." Finally, evangelism needs to be owned by each one of you. Not the word, so to speak, but the intention. You're all here. I assume you like it here. So why not invite a friend to church? Why not ask someone to come to Whitney and check it out? There should be no doctrinal test. There should be no pressure. That's not the way of Jesus. No. He simply met people where they were, and we can all do that. In conclusion, we should remember the words of St. Francis. We need to preach the gospel unceasingly. Use words only when necessary. And those words can be as simple as the invitation, check it out. Amen.